Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. It is a very rare moment for me when I can say that I have goosebumps because of my guest. My guest today, Charlaine Harris, is a legend. She has had, as you know, True Blood was modeled after her Suki Stackhouse series. She's had other shows written for her. She's got the Hallmark Channel. She may be getting ready to sign another television show. But maybe you didn't know this about Charlaine, that she has been writing straight for 38 years. She has is a member of every writing organization there is, including Mystery Writers of America, American Crime Writers League, Sisters in Crime, International Crime Writers Association, Sisters in Crime. She's and just for kicks, because she had nothing better to do, she joined Science Fiction Writers of America, Horror Writers Association, and RWA, just to make sure she's covered. I am so honored to have the legendary, the icon, Charlaine Harris with me. Charlaine Harris, welcome to Authors on the Air.
Oh, well, thank you. I feel real important now. I better say something profound.
Well, you don't even have to, because I don't even know how to answer profound. I enjoy a good chat, though, with a wonderful writer, and that you are. Congratulations on all your many successes. I think the first book you wrote, right out of the chute there, you won an Anthony Award for, didn't you?
Actually, I'd started writing many years before. My first two books were standalones, and then I wrote the Aurora Tea Garden books, which were conventional mysteries. And then I wrote the Lily Bard books. They were also conventional mysteries, but much harder edged. And it seemed to me that my career was not getting where I wanted it to go, though I'd never thought of myself as ambitious. I must have been, because I sat down and thought, you know, I've got to write something that appeals to more people. And gradually the shape of the book just occurred to me, and I thought, that's really what I want to write.
You know, it occurs to me that you love so many different genres, and you started off with mystery. Were you just a fanatical reader when you were growing up?
I was, yes. The best example my parents ever set for me, and they were very fine people in many ways, but they read in front of me. I knew that reading was really important because they loved it so much, and it became that important to me also.
What do you remember reading as a younger woman before you began writing?
Oh, Jane Eyre, for sure.
For really?
And also a lot of mysteries, E.X. Ferrer's, Ruth Rendell, Dale Shannon.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know, John D. MacDonald, Ed McBain.
Of course.
You know,
wow.
And of course, Agatha Christie, all the Golden Age writers.
They really were, weren't they?
They really were.
So, did you know that other than writing your poetry and your teenage angst, which was delightful, and poems about ghosts, by the way, did you know after you were writing plays that you really wanted to write novels?
Oh, yes, I wanted to write novels all along.
You knew?
Yeah, but, you know, you have to do other stuff before you can get there.
What other stuff did you do before you got there?
Writing-wise, mainly the other stuff I did was try to make a living. When I first graduated from college, very soon thereafter, I was supporting a husband who had gone back to school on the GI Bill, and my income, which was $1.60 an hour, was
wow.
What? Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible.
Well, you're talking my language, my friend. I know that. I know those times.
you remember? You probably remember.
I do.
But then when I married a second time. My husband, whom I'm still married to now, 40 years later,
congratulations,
offered me the opportunity to stay home and write full time. And I had enough time to write a book. And I did.
Do you think all of your reading and your poems about ghosts and teenage angst and playwriting help shape who you are as a writer in the beginning, and does that carry forward?
Oh, sure. I think you write what you're interested in. I don't think I would be the same person if I had decided to write on, you know, Buddhist monks,
right.
or you know, the mating habit of reindeer. I wrote about what spoke to me, what made me excited to put together something I could convey to other people, why I was interested, why I was excited about whatever it was.
So you wrote traditional mysteries, but you really are known for your paranormal stories. Do you think that harkens back to the time when you wrote poems about ghosts and so on?
I'm sure. I'm sure there was something in me that has always been drawn to the uncanny. And writing conventional mysteries was wonderful. I love the mystery field, and I feel like that's my original home.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the house I grew up in.
Sure.
But when I wanted to expand my career and expand what I was writing about, the supernatural was where I went, and I think it was the right move for me.
Obviously, it worked. I know that you live in Texas, but you're originally from Mississippi. Is that correct?
That's correct.
The South has a rich history of storytelling. Your folks were readers, but was your family and extended family or neighbors all, were they also storytellers?
Nope. Not a one.
They were not.
No. People, you know, weirdly, people have asked me that often if my grandmother told me ghost stories. She would have been the last person in the universe to have ever decided to sit down with her grandchildren at her knee and tell them ghost stories. She...
That's funny.
No tradition of storytelling in my family whatsoever.
So where did the love of supernatural come from, do you think, if you had to analyze it and look back?
Well,
you had an active imagination, right?
I had an active imagination. I have a very low boredom threshold. So I was constantly trying to keep myself entertained and fascinated, and reading Ray Bradbury and Paul Anderson, they really helped me keep my mind fed. And it just seemed to me that was so fascinating. I've never understood people who just say, oh, I don't read anything paranormal. I never do this. I never do that. And I thought, I just don't get it, you know.
You know, it's interesting to me that you said that, because I have two living brothers. My oldest brother, who's a year younger than I am, just read his first book just for pleasure last year. And and he's one of those guys who's got that real analytical mind. You know, he's a computer geek and all that. And I always thought it's so strange, because the rest of us in the family were big readers. And now he's discovering the joy of reading. And he's all excited to tell me about it, which is...
Well, that's great. I mean, you can right? only say, I told you so many times.
Exactly. And, yeah, exactly. And he's interested, interestingly enough, in the authors that I have the very great pleasure and honor to interview. And he always wants to listen to my show. And I think that's pretty cool, you know, for a guy who did not read. I would like to talk to you a little bit about your new book, which released in October, actually, but I know that you were busy over the holidays. I begged and bargained and you were unavailable. But An Easy Death is the first book in the Gunny Rose series. I love this genre for so many different reasons. First of all, it's kind of a little bit dystopian, but also the supernatural is there. And you've just been, I mean, the reviews are magnificent. So congratulations on that. No surprise. You know,
oh,
Lee Child
no,
and Karen Slaughter.
To me.
Oh, no, not at all. The book is just fantastic. And on top of that, Time Magazine calls it the top 10 best fantasy books of 2018, and I'm sure it will continue. Will you tell me where Gunny Rose came from, Lizbeth?
Well, as best I can remember, I was asked to invite to write a short story for a charity auction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt free to write whatever I wanted to. Since
that's
it was,
great,
since
though.
I wasn't going to get paid for it, since the whole thing was for charity, I thought, well, I might as well have fun and do something I haven't done before. And I started thinking about part of my childhood. I was raised in Mississippi, but my mother was from Texas. And every year we spent part of the summer here in Texas when she came back to help her grandparents, during rodeo because they ran a hotel. It was always full during rodeo. So she and her sisters would come help my grandparents then, and my mother would drag me along with her, of course, and my brother, who adapted much better than I did. I was really a fish out of water in Texas. But
I really
thought of it. There was just so much about it. The culture was so different. The people did such different things to my way of thinking. And that really stuck with me when I started thinking about writing something that was new. I thought, you know, I never have tapped into that. What would happen if, you know, and that's always what starts out the whole
right.
core of the book. What would happen if?
Right, what if, right. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was waiting for you to go ahead and continue. I want to hear about the book.
Sorry.
No.
I better shut up now. I've just been rambling.
No. This is your show. So let me just start off. The description, the synopsis says, it's set in a fractured United States in the southwestern country, country now known as Texoma. So that to me was my hook. That was the hook to me. And then the next thing is a world where magic is acknowledged but mistrusted, especially to a young gunslinger named Lizbeth Rose. Will you pick up the story from there and tell us a little bit about Gunny Rose?
Well, Lizbeth is an illegitimate child, but she has a loving mother and has acquired a pretty good stepfather. And he noticed how fast she was with her hands. And in the very poor country of Texoma, you have to find a way to make a living. Lizbeth doesn't want to be a teacher like her mother. She doesn't want to work in a store, but she's quick with her hands. And her stepfather puts a gun in her hand, and she finds out what she's really born to do. She's a great shot. And, of course, she's very proud of this. And she hires on when she's about 17, with a gun team that protects people who need protecting when they're in transit. It's not like a bodyguard operation. It's nowhere that sophisticated. But if you need to be hustled from one area to another without being bothered by bandits, you hire a gun team like Lizbeth's. And that's what she does when the book opens.
Is it your intention to have a young protagonist like Lizbeth, as you have in previous books?
Lizbeth is lots younger than any protagonist I've ever had. my protagonists have generally been in their 20s, 30s, or so on, or, you know, over the course of the series I wrote about them, they've aged that much. But Lisbeth is only 19, and I've never undertaken to write about someone that young.
It seems to me, just because of your popularity with Suki Stackhouse and the television series, that this would appeal to that demographic as well. And as I told you, my age in the green room, it absolutely appeals to me as well. I almost see you gathering up even more readers to follow you with this
type of
story. That
would be acceptable.
Now, the one thing that surprised me, Charlene, when I was reading this, is that you you have Russian wizards there, and I was very surprised about that. I wasn't expecting Russian wizards. Where did that come from in your brain?
God knows. I was going to write the book without any magic in it. And then I got to a certain point in the book, and I thought, there should be some magic here. And I thought, no, don't do it. Don't turn to the dark side. And then I thought, no, some magic would really liven it up, though. And so I thought, okay, let's just try it with some magic. And where would it come from? Well, obviously it would come from the wizards trained by Rasputin and brought over with the Russian royal family when they escaped the Bolshevik Revolution.
It's a fascinating book for so many reasons. I mentioned that I love the fact that it's this kind of a dystopian world, and it's got the supernatural. And now my only time I want to read anything historical is in the Bolshevik era. So it's the hat trick for me. It's so much fun to read, and I adored it. I love all of the storytelling. So let me ask you this. When you are deciding to write, and I think this is going to be a series, at least a trilogy, is it not?
It is.
Do you have a lot of ideas floating around in your head and saying, well, let me see, what do I want to talk about or what do I want to say? Is it like that for you, Charlene?
Yes. Yes, it is, because I have an agenda and I want to express how I feel about certain things in the book. I don't believe in preaching at the reader. That's the quickest way to lose a reader I can imagine.
Oh,
but
yes.
I think it's just being disingenuous to think that your point of view doesn't show through. It does, and it should. So I was trying to think in all my books about the best way to say what I wanted to say, so that the reader would understand where I was coming from when I wrote those books.
Well, you certainly have, gotten me hooked on this series. I can't wait for the next book to come out. It is wonderful. Let me ask you a little bit about when you write. Are you one of those disciplined writers where you sit down and you say, okay, I'm going to my office and I'm going to spend X amount of time or type X amount of words, and then I get to go home, wherever your office is. So, it could be an office in your house.
Yes.
Are you like that? Is that
yes.
how it works for you?
Yep.
And is that a product of the work ethic in you plus deadlines, or is that always the way you've written? It feels right to do it like that.
It's everything. It feels right to do it like that. I have a deadline, and I have to respect that. And to feel like a writer, I have to produce. And there's nothing more important to me than having that as my identity.
When you're sitting and writing, are you in a quiet space? Do you like background music? Can you sit in a coffee shop? Do you have to light a candle, or, you know, any of those things? I mean, what is it
like?
I think
it's wonderful when people can work in a crowded environment, but I can't. The dogs go, my door, the door in my office leads to the dog run. So my job is to get up and let them in and out all day.
Well, of course it is.
That's really pretty good, because otherwise I'd be sitting in that chair way too long at a time.
It is true. We are slaves to our pets. There's no doubt.
We are slaves to our pets.
So I want to ask you a really, really what I think most young writers, or debut writers, I should say, want to know. Someone must have given you advice about writing over the course of your career until you became who you are. You've heard all kinds of advice. What would you say to someone who has all these wonderful ideas but is having a hard time putting pen to paper?
Well, I would say you can't call yourself a writer until you finish.
Okay.
You have to finish. So many young writers I talk to say, oh, I had a great idea, and I started the book, and I wrote 30 pages, and then I had a better idea. You know, that is the way to never become a writer. That
right.
is the way to keep hopscotching and deceiving yourself. You have to finish the book or the short story. Whatever you're attempting, you have to finish, and then you will be a writer.
Charlene, are some people not meant to be writers?
Oh, boy, have I ever wrestled with this. Because earlier in my career, I used to read work by people who hadn't been published yet, and sometimes it was clear to me that they would never make it. But that was just my opinion, and I'm not publishing God. So I would have to say that talent is very important, so is perseverance.
Yes.
You have to have both those things.
I readily admit that I could never be a writer. I can, you know, barely send out an email that makes any sense. And, you know, it's hard enough for me to put my blouse on right side out. So I could never be a writer. And so I guess that's why I'm in love with writers. You are my celebrities because you bring so much joy. You may be turning Gunny Rose into a series. We don't know yet, but there will be another book. Can you give us an idea of when we will have that?
You'll have it in October if all goes as planned. It's called A Longer Fall, and in it, Lisbeth goes to the country now called Dixie because she's been hired to go there. And, of course, she has a lot of adventures there.
I bet.
It's a more serious book in some ways, I think.
Do you love writing as much as you used to when you first started?
I do, but the way I write has changed quite a bit as I get older.
So?
And I'm 67 now. I rewrite more than I ever have.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised to hear that. I would think it would be just the opposite.
You would think, but no. Writing never gets any easier. Writing is just hard. If it weren't hard, I probably wouldn't want to do it. But it's hard.
Well, let me ask you this question then, and this is going to be my last one because I promised I wouldn't keep you. Are you nervous when you release a new book? Do you still get anxious and worry if people are going to like it? Really?
Yeah.
Even though you're a known entity. I mean, you are a best-selling author. You're everywhere. Everybody knows your name. Yet you still get nervous about it.
Of course. Even when I send the manuscript into my editor, I'm very, very anxious every time We all fear being exposed as frauds.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about that, Charlene Harris. I really don't. You've kind of proven your writing chops to the world. So I want to thank you so much for taking time to speak to me today. It has been such an honor and a pleasure to talk to you. Will you come back one day?
Oh, sure. No problem.
You're just a doll. I want to thank, this is the international best-selling author, Charlene Harris. You know her from True Blood and lots of other books. The new book is called, ready, An Easy Death. This is the book number one in the trilogy for Gunny Rose. Go and get it right now. It is available everywhere in every bookstore known to man. And Charlene, thank you so much. You're just the best.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I appreciated it. This was just easy as, really as easy as having a conversation in my home.
There you go. Thank you, Charlene Harris. Thank you, listeners. And thank you, Mom and Dad. I'll see ya.
In store for your business this week at Staples?
Shopping like a CEO? My, look at those savings.
Right now at Staples, save like a big cheese, a big shot, a boss. Because this week, when you buy one expanding file folder, you get a second one 40% off.
Those are boss-size savings.
So start the new year right by stocking up, saving big, and getting organized.
At Staples, where there's a whole lot in store.
Ends 2/2/19. In-store only, valid on select assorted SKUs.